The time of war and decision to respond has historically been thought of as a call to unity and a single purpose for the greater good. That thought is not totally accurate. Much like as we've seen in more recent times, those times of war which are looked back at with the understanding today that it was a necessary battle for what was right to be preserved weren't seen that way by all back at that time. My next guest spent pretty much the length of American involvement in one war, researching the actions and dissents that took place in America at a variety of levels in lead up to joining the war against the Nazis in World War II. His book is 1941, Fighting the Shadow War, Divided America and the World at War. We say good morning to Mark Wardman. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
And Mark's website, Mark with a C, M-A-R-C, markwartmanbooks.com. And yes, we do have a link over at our website, so no need to remember that. So what was your initial mission with 1941? And having read 1941, Divided America and the World at War, how much of that mission went on to maybe tracks that surprised even you as you did your research?
Yeah. Well, you know, I started out with the World War II was, you know, my father's, the greatest generation's war. It overshadowed everything about my life growing up and all my peers. But I always wondered, why did we leave Western Europe to the Nazis for so long? You know, why did we allow the Brits to fight on alone? You know, why did the Japanese, why were they able to devastate China while we continued to live at peace? And, you know, what was going on with that thinking in that period? And also, you know, why was it that the Germans had to declare war on the United States before we finally directly went to war with Hitler? So I was asking lots of questions that are hard to answer, you know. And as I started researching the period, I was increasingly confronted by how deeply isolationist the United States was in that period. And what surprised me was, you know, it wasn't just people who were known as the Bundes, essentially Nazis in America. There were people from across the spectrum who were isolationists, and their motivations ranged from being anti-war to being anti-Semitic. There were people who were liberals, there were people who were socialists, there were people who were communists, and then there were people who were true Nazis, and there were people who simply thought that the war in Europe was none of our business. So, you know, I was surprised at just how the depth and the differences in the backgrounds of the people who were opposed to U.S. entry into the war.
And, of course, at the head of the nation was then-President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And one of the many surprising facts I learned from reading 1941 was at that time, America, as far as a military strength was concerned, was ranked number 18 in the world. So did that isolationism over the course of those however many years you want to measure that isolation attitude within, was that something that also impacted America's readiness to go to war?
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. So the United States had passed laws, Congress had passed laws in the 1930s, specifically forcing the country to remain neutral in any foreign war. So at the, America had not was not preparing itself for the possibility of war overseas or in distant lands, and we had a very small force. We had a substantial navy, but our army was tiny. It was designed for basically for Western hemispheric issues, and we were in no way prepared for a major war. And even as strong as our navy was, we were absolutely not at all prepared for the possibility of a two-ocean war. Now, there were lots of reasons for this isolationist and policy, some of which was simply economic. The United States had gone through the Great Depression. Anytime you're hit with an economic downturn like that, you tend to turn inward. You don't think you don't want to get involved in foreign conflicts. So the United States did not devote resources to its military and allowed the military to decline enormously after World War I. And, of course, then there were a variety of other reasons that drove people. There was memories of World War I itself with its horrific war of attrition in the trenches of the Western Front. And Americans thought, you know, this was going to be another meat grinder war, and they didn't want to send their boys over there. There was also this question of, well, why should the United States pull Great Britain's irons out of the fire when, you know, should we be going to war for the King of England and for the world's history's largest colonial empire? You know, the U.S., FDR in particular, was highly anti-colonial. And, you know, this was another question that Americans faced. And then finally, of course, there was a very large population of German Americans and Italian Americans who did not want to go to war with the countries of their heritage. So, you know, there were a variety of those reasons that kept the U.S. Isolationist and not investing in its military.
And with Mark Wortman, his new book, 1941, Fighting the Shadow War, Divided America in a World at War, markwortmanbooks.com, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Again, staying on FDR, for at least for a moment, he knew the will of the nation was, as you said, isolationism, but he saw the future and its danger and potential in the making. How many ways did FDR, I guess you could say, play the enemy in order to get them to do things without America doing things and in turn build support for the actions that he saw were needed?
FDR was very aware that the conquest of Europe by Hitler and the potential for defeating the British would have grave consequences for the United States. You know, he believed that certainly by the beginning of 1941 that it was almost inevitable that the United States was going to have to fight Hitler. But at the same time, he knew that the American people were not ready to go to war. So he began to send U.S. naval forces deeper and deeper into the Atlantic Ocean, farther and farther to the east, on what they called neutrality patrols. The U.S. Navy ships went out, and if they spotted foreign warships, they would make an announcement of their position and often would shatter those ships or submarines announcing their positions. Well, the only power that this helped was the British. And the Germans understood the game that was being played. And it was as if Roosevelt was sort of tapping Hitler on the chest and saying, go ahead, hit me, hit me, hit me, in hopes that Hitler would do just that and unleash his forces against U.S. Navy neutrality patrols, with the idea that in doing so, FDR hoped the American people would be aroused from their isolationist outlook and understand that this was a direct threat to the United States.
And it's a philosophy also going to play in the Pacific side of things, too. We're wrapping up a time with Mark Wortman, 1941, Fighting the Shadow War, Divided America in a World at War. MarkWortmanBooks.com is his website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Mark also writes about the very interesting dynamics between FDR and Winston Churchill, talks about people who saw what was coming out of the world of politics, people like Dorothy Thompson, William Shire, who had means of communication through radio and through columns at the time, and how their words were responded to. And most notably, you help, I think, everyone realize just how unknowing undeservingly sanitized the legend of Charles Lindbergh has been made over the years, and you presented his true actions to the point where Lindbergh's at the time influence appears to have led to the advance of appeasement, which further empowered Hitler to move, invade, and take over Western Europe.
Yeah, I assume you're referring to how Lindbergh in the 1930s visited Nazi Germany at the invitation of the Germans and went on aviation inspection tours there. He was deeply impressed by what he saw. For Lindbergh, aviation was evidence of, or the state of aviation in a country was evidence of how advanced that society was. And he was convinced that Germany was the most technologically and powerful aviation country in the world. And in fact, he was duped by Goering, Hermann Goering, the head of the German Luftwaffe, into believing that the, Germany had far more aircraft than they really did. And he went back, made a report from his inspection tour, told the American authorities and military authorities that he believed that Germany had an aviation that could not be an aviation power that could not be defeated. Joseph Kennedy, the U.S. ambassador to London, was convinced that Great Britain would be defeated by German air power as a result of what Lindbergh had told him, and called upon FDR not to support the British. He thought it was a losing battle. Lindbergh came back to the United States. He at one point had planned to move to Berlin because he was so impressed by what he had seen in Germany. But he came back to the United States, and he became the leading spokesperson for an organization called America First, which became the largest anti-war campaign in United States history. When Lindbergh spoke, tens of thousands of people turned out for his rallies. And he was convinced that this war in Europe was none of America's business. He called for building our defensive walls along the Atlantic, and that he claimed nobody could attack us. And, of course, he was deeply shocked when the Japanese, with aircraft, managed to get through and attack Pearl Harbor. But he was also, he had another darker side to him that has largely been lost over the years. I spent a lot of time reading his personal diaries in the archives that are maintained at Yale University. He kept his diaries every day. And wrote about his thoughts and his activities. And those diaries were published, but all of the comments about Jews were expurgated from them. And he was, in these diaries, he was obsessed with Jews. He was convinced that Jews had an outsized influence and were pushing the United States into a war against its will, and that they were doing so for out of self-interested reasons and for reasons he called other than American. Eventually, he made a public statement to that effect, and he was widely condemned for it. But he had a big, big influence in driving the isolationist opposition to Franklin Roosevelt. And ultimately, Roosevelt was not in a position, as a result of that duel with Lindbergh and the America First movement, was not in a position to bring the United States fully into the war. And ultimately, it was Germany had to declare war on the United States after the attack on Pearl Harbor.
It is often said that history is the route to lessons. And when you have history that is pure and factual, which is what Mark presents in 1941, Fighting the Shadow War, Divided America in a World at War, you get truly valuable lessons that can be translated into knowledge and awareness that can lead us to a better today and a more positive tomorrow. You'll see a lot of similarities in the variety of players at the various levels of government and non-government, media and non-media, that Mark presents. In 1941, Fighting the Shadow War, A Divided America and a World at War, markwerkmanbooks.com is his website. Added to the must-read list because knowledge is your empowerment, and knowledge from yesterday can empower you for a greater tomorrow. Mark, fantastic job with the book. You holding true to history is indeed a rarity, unfortunately, by way too many people, and you really help run counter to that error-filled path, and thank you for doing that, for being here this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Chris. I've really enjoyed this.